Our gospel reading this morning comes from the book of John, chapter 20, verses 19 through 29. This also is adapted from a paraphrase from Down Under. It was a Sunday, the first day of the week, when the tomb was found empty. That same evening, the disciples met together. They locked all the doors of the house where they were meeting because they were afraid of being tracked down by the religious authorities. Suddenly, Jesus appeared among them and stood among them saying, "Good evening to you all." He proceeded to show them the deep scars in his hands and side. The disciples, of course, were over the moon at seeing their rabbi again. Jesus spoke again, saying, "All the best to you. God sent me into the world, and in the same way, I'm sending you." Having said that, he breathed a big breath onto them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit, all of you. If you forgive anyone who has sinned, then their sins are forgiven. If you withhold forgiveness for any sins, you will carry that pain." When this happened, Thomas, known as the twin, and one of the 12, was missing. The other disciples told him that they had seen the rabbi, but they couldn't convince him. "I'm not falling for that one," Thomas replied. "I'd have to see the nail holes in his hands before I'd believe it. In fact, I'd have to feel the holes myself and touch the spear wound in his side." A week later, the disciples again gathered behind locked doors in the same house. And this time, Thomas was with them. Despite the locked doors, Jesus came and stood among them again and said, "Good evening to you all." Then he turned to Thomas and said, "Here are my hands, Thomas. Put your finger here in the wound." And pulling up his shirt, he said, "And here is my side. You can put your hand in the hole. Let go of your doubts and trust me." Thomas, of course, was blown away and said, "You are my rabbi, teacher, and my God." Jesus said to him, "Believing is not that hard when you've seen me, is it? Imagine how much God will smile on those who put their trust in me without having ever seen me." Will you pray with me? And now let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. I always enjoy this story about Thomas with his edgy attitudes and his gutsy questions. He is a down-to-earth, no-nonsense sort of guy. He wants to see, to touch, to understand. Some of my best teachers have been people like Thomas, folks who ask embarrassing questions, who have challenged accepted norms. The church of my childhood had a corner on the truth. It was a day of systematic theology and accepted dogma. They told me that my questions were doubts, but I just wanted to know why, what if, how, and how come. Later, as a young adult, a Bible school expelled me. They said that my probing questions were undermining the authority of the church leaders and destroying the faith of the community. Back then, I was hurt by their accusation, but now I'm kind of proud of it. I still have questions, lots of questions. I ask how people in Congress can tie themselves in such knots, why they penalize the poor and support the wealthy, and wars don't make any sense to me at all. I don't understand how our society can let any child go hungry, or how we can abide human trafficking in our own state when we abolished slavery over 150 years ago. Sometimes I am flummoxed by church politics, and I wonder about some traditional beliefs. Do any of you folks have doubts or questions like this, or am I the only one? I want to see hands. Well, we got some honest folks. We begin asking questions as children, lots of questions. Have you ever known a two-year-old who has learned to ask why and likes to practice a lot? When we grow, we ask questions about God, about the church, and what it means to be a Christian. If we're lucky, we'll have folks around us who won't shut us down with pat answers and close the door on further exploration. Walt Whitman wrote, "Examine all that you have been taught and discard that which insults your soul." You know, blind faith can be dangerous. When Judy Fisher joined her church, her pastor told her, "Now that you are a Christian, you will always have joy and peace in your heart." Judy fretted and finally decided that she must not be a real Christian yet, because she couldn't feel joy or peace no matter how hard she tried. You see, her husband had died just 3 months before, and she was plagued by painful memories from childhood. She needed a place to talk about her sadness and ask some hard questions so that she could heal. Through the centuries, the church has gained a well-earned, rotten reputation about making you check your brain at the door. That's not right. God gave you a brain for a reason, and God expects you to use it. That Easter morning, in our story, the disciples found Jesus' tomb empty. You know, Sherry told the kids this morning that Easter is a joyous time, and she's right. But by nightfall, the followers of Jesus who huddled in a locked room must have been terribly confused, all of them in shock. All they had was a story here, a rumor there. They worried as they listened for a knock at the door, afraid the soldiers would come and take them away, afraid that the Romans would execute them too. They weren't waiting for Jesus to show up. They probably didn't even pray much. They just held on and tried to comfort each other. And then Jesus showed up, and their terror and sadness turned to amazement and joy. I don't know where Thomas was that first night. Did he go somewhere to grieve alone? Had he slipped out to pick up dinner for everybody? When Thomas heard the tale that the other Jesus people told, he thought they were putting him on. I can't say I blame him. Thomas wasn't going to put his trust in anything until he could see it for himself. A week later, Jesus showed up again. He didn't scold Thomas for his questions or his doubts or for his hesitation to believe the impossible. I like that. I like it a lot. In Christian writings of the third century, everyone called him Thomas the Incredulous. That continued until the 13th century, when the church dubbed him Doubting Thomas. Christians have tripped over him ever since. Now we use it as a pejorative. Call someone a Doubting Thomas, and what you're really saying is that he is a bullheaded, unreasonable skeptic. Actually, the words Doubting Thomas never appear in the Bible. In the earliest Greek copies of our Bible, the Greek word for doubt isn't part of the Thomas story. The word they translated as doubt should really be translated as not trusting or unfaithful. In a recent poll of religious attitudes in the United States, unchurched people said they might consider joining a church if certain criteria were met. They wanted things like friendliness, preaching that is relevant to the world today, a program for their own age group. They wanted childcare and ample parking, and they emphatically wanted to see people, the church people, walk their talk. But one of the most important things folks wanted in a church was a place where their questions and doubts would be treated with honesty and respect. We all have a mixture of belief and trust, questions and doubt. We come to church hoping that our faith will be nurtured in the midst of our uncertainties. Jesus said we needed to become like children. You know, whatever else he meant by that, I wonder if maybe Jesus was also saying that we should ask questions like children do, constantly and with no regard for convention. In 1988, a group of ecumenical Christians in Helsinki, Finland, created a worship service called the St. Thomas Mass. They wanted to make a place for those who thought that questions and doubts indicated a weak faith. At this worship service, they invite people to treat their questions and doubts as gifts from God. Thomas Christians, not a bad idea, huh? The UCC has a long tradition of honoring those who ask questions, who challenge the establishment. In this congregation, people expect you to use your brain and to explore the things you question. Special kudos, and I know there's other groups that do the same, but special kudos go to the spirituality group, one of our regular church groups. They applaud members who voice doubts that a lot of folks are afraid to speak. Ken Kesselis, a retired Anglican priest and leader of In the Emergent Church Among Anglicans, writes, "We don't always need to be sure about everything. God does not require us to be doubt-free. God is calling us to be people who will stop to listen, to question, to learn, to grow." Okay, we need to explore our questions if we are to be healthy in our spiritual journey. But when we do challenge our faith-based assumptions, there are mistakes that most of us make. First mistake: our earliest teachers taught us to assume that every question has one right answer and only one. Now, as adults, we still hope for that familiar comfort of that single correct answer to our questions, cut and dried, laid in a fancy box, and tied with a ribbon. Folks, let me tell you, life just isn't a multiple choice with only one answer, and neither is it a puzzle where all of the pieces fit. Second mistake: most of our doubts and questions have more than one way to approach them. There's a Chinese proverb that says, "There are many paths to the top of the mountain." None of us has the whole picture. When we think we've found the answer, what we've really found is an insight, a tiny insight, one more candle to illumine our path. Each insight holds part of the truth, an odd-shaped piece of a puzzle which we will never complete. One Sunday in the children's sermon, a pastor, not Brooks, used squirrels as an object lesson. She said, "I'm going to describe something, and I want you to raise your hand when you guess it." The children nodded eagerly. "Okay, this thing lives in trees, and it eats nuts." No hands went up. "It's gray, and it has a long, bushy tail." The children looked at each other in silence. "And it jumps from branch to branch, and it chatters and flips its tail when it's excited." Not a single hand went up. Finally, 6-year-old Larry tentatively raised his hand. "Well," Larry said, "I know the answer must be Jesus, but it sure sounds like a squirrel to me." Don't ever think that doing children's sermons is easy. Third mistake: the hardest mistake we make is that we think that we are the only ones with doubts or questions, and that if we express our concerns, people will think less of us. St. Paul says in a letter to the church at Corinth, "We don't yet see things clearly. We're squinting in a fog, peering through a mist." I like knowing that Paul could at least say he didn't know it all. Of course, if we ask a question, we do have to admit that there is something we don't know, and that's a tough thing for any human to own up to. Some time ago, a fellow named Roger Jones applied for a job at Scott Paper Company. At the interview, the manager told him this: "Roger, we have three kinds of people here at Scott, and we characterize each kind with a punctuation mark. Some people are periods, and the sound they make is duh. They have learned all there is to learn and are satisfied with the answers they have been given. These folks live their lives in a very small box. Other people are like question marks, and the sound they make is, huh? They know that there are things that they don't know, even if they haven't discovered what those things are yet. They are on a growing edge for learning. The third group of people are like exclamation points, and the sound they make is, aha. They have discovered new insights and are excited about exploring possibilities. Roger, if you want to succeed here at Scott Paper, you need to be a question mark so that you can become an exclamation point. When we explore our doubts and uncertainties, our greatest need is to find a place to stand, a rest stop, as we try to think things through so that we can catapult into another question." Did you notice the title of this sermon? I'm going to give you a minute so all of you can get your bulletins out and look at them. The title is "That Funny String of Symbols." It comes from Roger's story, plus a few other bits. The question mark is Roger's, huh? The exclamation point is Roger's, aha. And the arrows, they are there to remind us that spiritual development is a process, not a period. We have to move back and forth between these two punctuation marks: question mark, exclamation point, and back to question mark. The problem comes when someone settles on a period. Then they get stuck in that dead-end stage, and so they become part of the frozen chosen. A Presbyterian minister, Frederick Buechner, writes, "Doubt is the ants in the pants of faith. Doubt keeps faith awake and moving." If you want a spiritual journey that is vibrant and alive, you must seek out this path of doubt, question, and discovery. It takes courage to explore the hard questions. It takes courage to challenge our sacred cows. But it's the key to a healthy spiritual life. And my friends, today I make you this promise. If you dare to walk this path, exploring your doubts and questions, sharing your ideas and your experiences together, I guarantee that your doubts and questions will open the door to an amazing new world of grace and hope. So this morning I say bravo for Thomas, and bravo for each of you who is willing to treat your questions and doubts as a gift from God. This morning I challenge you to become Thomas Christians. Ask questions, doubt boldly, and go where you have never gone before. Amen.